You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and today we break down Manchester City and their road to a historic treble, as well as looking at West Ham winning a European trophy, our end-of-year awards, and more. Okay, here are the topics for the show. Manchester City win the treble, West Ham win the Europa Conference League, Tottenham's new manager, Messi to Miami, and our end of season Two Robbie Awards. Okay, my friend. Course, one place to start. We've been looking forward to it all season long.
Yeah.
The Champions League final out in Istanbul, Turkey. Manchester City win 1-0 with a Rodri goal in the second half. They've reached the promised land, I guess, for Man City, the one that they've always wanted. But let's get into the game, mate, and let's bounce to you in terms of what you thought. I guess at the start with the lineups, was there any surprises in terms of the team shape or the lineup?
You know, we got the team sheets come out, was it like 45 minutes now before kickoff? No Kyle Walker. It was a little bit of a surprise, Rob. Obviously, he went with Akanji, Diaz, and Ake is almost like a back three with Stones into that midfield role that we've seen that he's done so well. We'll talk about him, obviously, a little bit later as we get into the podcast. But Walker not playing was kind of a little surprise, Rob. But then, you know, when you're thinking that Inter maybe go with two number nines, there's not like maybe the pacey winger that he's got to deal with. Maybe if you're thinking like a Real Madrid. But I was getting and picked up a couple of things, Rob, where people were suggesting, oh, no, is this Pep's overthinking it again in a final, getting it wrong? Wasn't to be the case in the end. And listen, Walker said it was a difficult conversation between him and Pep. That he wasn't playing. Obviously, Kanji came in for that sort of central defensive kind of situation with the two strikers, and they got away with it. But I have to say, Rob, it was a little surprising that no Kyle Walker based on
well, how don't he you think? Yeah, I think it's a tough decision. I think we all know how much he loves Nathan Ake. I read it, Rob, is that I think he prefers the balance of a left-footed centre-back on the left side of that three and a right, say, Kanji. We know he's done a good job on the left-hand side. If Walker plays, then Akanji's got to go to the left. Walker's not quite so good with the ball. Akanji's better with the ball. And Nathan Ake is on the left-hand side. You've got a left footer and a right footer. I thought that was the reason why he would go with Ake. Centre-back, you know, he's done very well. And it worked out. But yeah, that was a big decision. The camera went on Kyle Walker a few times, sat on the bench.
Yeah.
But that's how I read it. I thought it was just a tough call and I had no problem with it.
No, although I'd just say, you know, if we're talking about, you know, Pep putting in defenders and defenders needing to do a job, again, I didn't think the profile and the matchup was like the pacey kind of wide guy who might isolate and cause a Kanji that many problems. So I get it, but I must admit, I was a little surprised that no Kyle Walker based on just what he brings with that energy and the power. And certainly maybe against DeMarco, I thought was probably Inter's better player and a threat down that left-hand side. I don't know how that would have played out with Walker there. But listen, Pep got it right this time. It wasn't overthought. The balance was right. John Stones into midfield, my friend. Can we let's have a little John Stones appreciation? Because initially, Robbie's been in there is like, you know, two sixes next to Rodri, the box that's going to, you know, support. I've got to be honest, yesterday he looked more like an eight. He was getting on his bike. He was getting down the wings. He was joining play in. He was twisting and turning and flicking in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at John Stones. I'm out on vacation now, so we're in a bar in Italy watching this, and I'm looking at John Stones. It's like I said to a friend that we're with. It's like he looks like a man possessed. He looked the best player in the most composure, Rob, the most bravery to receive the ball, dribbling by people in midfield, making good decisions in a performance that you know, we'll get into it, Rob, wasn't anywhere near one of City's best. No. I think there's a reason, there's a couple of reasons for that, which we'll get into. But John Stones, I mean, what a confident performance it was. He went off a little later on, didn't he? I think pretty exhausted later on. But wow, I thought he was the best player on the pitch, actually. He looked like he was head and shoulders in terms of his confidence, of his ability, his size, his physical. Stones was amazing. Not many others were for Man City.
But you're right. I thought when City, I have to say, Robin, and starting to talk about them, I thought there was a nervousness, a bit of edginess about City. I thought from the back, I thought the goalkeeper didn't quite look his normal, composed, in control self. I thought the build-up was poor, was not with the same intensity and passing and technical ability that we've seen. As you say, John Stones at times was a man almost like, give me the ball. And what a departure is for John Stones, Rob, the guy, you know, let's go back 2 years maybe when we're saying he's a guy who's low in confidence, he's a guy who's always going to make a mistake, you know, in a big situation and kind of let you down. Wow, what a kind of sort of rise he's going to, and a confidence boost that's been for him and for Pep, really, because we've now gone from John Stones being, you know, an important centre-back to John Stones being an important inverted full-back, if not, you know, a number eight on a day when one or two of his other teammates weren't as open to having the ball, Rob, and it didn't look to me like they were wanting to get on things and make a mistake that might have cost.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the two reasons for me, Rob, is that those nerves. And a lot of players said it afterwards. They said how badly they played.
Yeah,
Erling Haaland, you know, I saw an interview with him and saying that how nervous he was, that he was that he felt it like deep within him. He was very, very nervous. Mm. He had very little impact. So that's one side of it. You've got to give credit to Inter.
And I
think as much as the nervous bit, Man City have played. They've played in big games before. And of course, this is nothing bigger for them right now with this team. This was the big moment for them to do it. And I think we agreed, Rob, didn't we? We've been saying it for months now that this team, I felt it. Then I've said it than previous seasons. I'm like, they ain't going to win it. I remember saying it on the show. They're not winning it because of the defensive side of it. That's been better. And they went through it and won it. But Inter's approach, I mean, made it scrappy, made it ugly. The wing backs, as you mentioned, absolutely flying into the wide players. This is as good a way tactically, I think, to play against a Pep team than there is.
Because
in terms of natural ability in these players, they're nowhere near as good as City. But when you've got three centre backs and they absolutely follow those midfield players into midfield, that leaves two centre backs against Haaland. Wing backs, don't worry about that. They're flying up. They're very central. They did a great job in midfield. They hustled. They worked really, really hard. They fouled. And I got to be honest, you know, I'm getting frustrated with a referee. We've seen this referee before. Yeah. And I said to my mate, let things go.
Yeah.
I thought he did it too much. I think the Inter players, and I don't care what anybody, if there's Inter fans out there, I detest the diving and exaggerating. And they go in, and what happened in this game many times, Rob, is they go in, they're going very physical on City players. And then there's a little bit of contact and they fling themselves to the ground. Yeah. Happened so many times, Rob. They foul and then they get down as they're hurt as well. So I was getting really frustrated with that. A few of my pals text me about, said, this is ruining this game. So again, there'll be people out there, well, all players dive and all that. And I know that most players dive now in modern football. But this, and I'm not saying Italians or anybody else, but this Inter team, God, they went to ground and they embellished a little bit and they made it rough, aggressive and scrappy. But I understand that's what you've got to do.
It's a game plan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a game plan. I
thought they played particularly well, Rob. I thought they gave everything that they need to do. And, you know, late on in the game, a couple of different decisions, a couple of different techniques of either heading the ball or Lukaku with the chance that Ederson comes up and saves. Could have been very different, Rob. Could have been particularly different. And you're right. I was with some friends watching the game and we're talking, and I'm thinking like this becomes a very different test for City. We all know, you know, that they were favourites coming in. We all know the ability in the team. We all know what it meant. But I just wondered if City players, a few of them, were going through like dark moments, a bit like, you know, Real Madrid semi-final. We've got lost to Chelsea in a final 1-0 when we didn't play so well. You know. Getting to quarterfinals and not getting right was this going to be a day, another day, when we didn't think Inter could play as well? They were, you know, making the game, breaking the game up. There were dark arts were coming out, all those things. And I wondered, Rob, whether City could still get over that, because that's as much as a mental as a physical thing. If on that day you're not really playing that well, then all of a sudden the opposition are kind of controlling you. It's not many chances at either end, but all of a sudden, like, I think we all expected eventually City's football will start, they'll click in here, they'll get a goal, and then we'll see them. Well, that never really came in the first half. And all of a sudden, I was wondering whether what's going on now with this group of players. And obviously, the De Bruyne with his hamstring that we knew, well, we now know he's been nursing for 2 months. You could tell he wasn't right the moment he went down. And I think he went to cross a ball a little later on, and what, 36 minutes on the clock. He's having to come off. Fortunately, you've got Phil Foden who can come on. But massive blow, you know, for City. So another thing, Rob, where I'm thinking, wow, this is a real sort of mental test of City as well as the football test.
Yeah, absolutely right. But I always felt, Rob, and I don't know whether, you know, of course, Inter had a couple of brilliant chances late on. And Man City, I think Pep's always said it, to be fair, that in games like this, you need a little bit of luck. They got a little bit of luck. Goalkeeper came up with a couple of saves. They got a little bit of luck to win that trophy. But you know, the best teams ever have needed that little bit of luck. I always felt though, Rob, even when it's at 0-0, I always felt that this is a bit of an ugly game. City aren't playing well. Inter doing a pretty good job with what they've got. Really, really good again. I didn't like the Plectin a little bit, but that aside, what a good performance and hard-working performance from them. Mm. But I always felt that City looked better and they'd find a way at some point. Remember Pep saying before the game that they need to be patient in this game. I don't know whether that was in their heads a little bit, and they were very tentative with their football, but the football was such a struggle, and it was slow. I thought it was like for slow. Them, yeah, now, for temperatures them. Are, for them, it was a slow game, which again suited Inter. But I just felt like at some point they would find a way. It was 0-0. Inter weren't offering much of a threat, Rob. I didn't think Inter offered any quality where.
But I think Inter's game plan was to get to 60 minutes pretty clean and then make changes, you know, and. Jacko came off a little earlier with a bit of cramp. I think what was it? Oh, just to your point, Rob, a kind of strange, as I'm watching the game yesterday, and it might be my eyes, might have been I'd had a beer watching the game, might have been my TV. Did the pitch look a bit slim and small to you? Did he not? I just felt like when City try to make the pitch big, Inter were always. Like, not that far off, like almost like it was a smaller pitch and they couldn't find that space in the wide end. I was looking from the penalty area to the touchline. Didn't look that wide to me. So when they went in those positions, like Inter were always able to get a body close to
them. I'm laughing because the bar we were in, I was with my mate and it was packed in there. Of course, there's a ton of Inter fans because we're in Italy. I was at an angle. There's this great big screen. And I got a weird aspect on the game, so I can't help you. I don't know. But the ball was going. I thought, where's that? So we actually, at half time, we end up running back to the hotel to watch the second half because they did have it in the hotel. Mm-hmm. And it was great to really study the game in the second half. But the first half was kind of weird. But I just think, Rob, I mean, I can't imagine the dimensions are too different. Inter did a great job with that back three, with those wing backs, those three midfield players that have got plenty of energy in there. I just thought they did a really good job. And you know what, Rob? You know, the way that the goal came, and it was it was such a typical Man City goal, Rob, that is like, there it is. There it is. It took him, what was it, the nearly 70 minutes. Akanji breaks forward, plays a clever ball. Through ball in behind, in that area that we've talked about for years, in the red zone, the hot spot.
They were rarely there, though, Rob, all game, were they? They did it.
So all the years of grooving this way, that their strategy, the work that's worked so well over the years, there it was. And I'm like, there it is. There's Man City in behind. Pull the ball back. Rodri, beautiful slot from him again. Another player that just didn't play well on the day. And that was a moment. But I just thought, well, that's it. That's Man City. It's taken them a long time to find that. But that's what they can do. Muscle memory. They got in behind that clever Manuel Akanji ball. Bernardo Silva? But I mean, Bernardo looked good again. Yeah. Bernardo's such a class player. in any environment. He always seems to be really good on the ball. I was just pleased to see the way that they scored with a typical City goal.
I mean, it was a brilliant goal as well, Rob. When you saw sort of from behind the goal and you see the margin of error that he's got in such a game to you know, that's like technique at the very top. That's when you're bang under pressure. You've got a yard either side of the post and the defender that you're going to bend it round. I mean, it was a brilliant finish. I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant finish. Maybe didn't get enough credit in the game. But it was interesting, like you said, I was listening to interviews. So Jack Grealish, first thing he says after the game, I didn't play well. You know, we're going to Kevin De Bruyne with the injury, but said we didn't play well. I didn't particularly start well. Erling Haaland, Gundogan, Rodri, all of them, Robert, it was almost like big relief to get it done. We didn't play well, but we found a way and we've won the thing that everybody's been saying we've got to win if we want to be up there with the great teams in English football.
Just a couple of others, Rob, before we get onto what it means for City and maybe some of the scenes, I thought were some powerful images afterwards. You know, Edison came up with the save late, and this could have been different. Mm. This could have been extra time. Lukaku misses from, what was he, 6 yards out with a header?
Yeah. I think it's more of a miss than a save, I've got to be honest. If I'm Lukaku, that's more of a miss than a save.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But I thought Edison had come up with a couple of saves during the day. I thought Ruben Diaz, Rob, was one that I would single out as having a great game. We talked about John Stones. Gundogan was quiet. And let's just have a couple of minutes, Rob. And I don't think it's Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Now, no impact to the game, right? Really, and I know afterwards he said he was nervous. He's only 22 years of age. Yeah. I get that. And he's going to go on. He's a record goal scorer. So, of course, a brilliant signing. He's had a great season. Should somebody with that stature, with that record, be making an impact more? Mm-hmm. And again, I know people out there who cares. I know it's not mega important.
If he wants to become Ballon d'Or winner on a regular basis, then these are the games, the Mbappes, the Neymar, the Messis, the Ronaldos have taken these games on. This is where that's where you earn it.
And they've looked like the star player.
So there was two things. I thought it was sort of my sort of a thought on Haaland and Manchester City was fear the Champions League next season if you're the other teams, because I think City have won it thinking we can be better. We can do that. We can have better days than this and win it and come back. And I think getting this first one's important. Whatever we'll talk about the legacy, whatever we'll talk about Pep, whatever we talk about where City go and what they could possibly achieve, et cetera, et cetera. So many top players, and Haaland's one of them, who said he didn't quite have a day. I get the sense that some of them wouldn't mind having this day back. And of course they've won, and of course they'll celebrate, and of course it's a brilliant achievement.
It's great.
But someone will come back, and Haaland is a type. If he's going to be put in that very highest bracket, Rob, and if he's just a goal scorer and doesn't impact games in other ways in those big moments, he'll fall a little bit short of those greats.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And I tell you what, I'm looking at him, I'm thinking he's in a great place with a great manager, Rob, to make him great. Because I think Pep can now... I just felt like Erling Haaland had such his reputation. He'd come and he'd bang all these goals in. It's like, no one's gonna tell me how to get better. No one can... And to be fair to Erling Haaland, he's always talked about wanting to improve. He's a big thinker of his game. I don't think he's that guy. No. But now, with a few big games, he knows himself that he didn't really have a big game. I think that Pep now could really work with him. I think he will take it in from Pep. Pep can sort of say, listen, in these games, let's think about that or this kind of run or finding a way, Erling, to affect the game. They had a bigger Cherby next to him and these centre-backs that were very aggressive. And I don't know whether... You know, did you say before, Rob, that you thought... Was it him that in a game that he got spooked a little bit?
He got spooked by...
It was
Rudiger. Right. Was at Chelsea against Real Madrid. He spooked him a little bit, Rob. You could tell. He's 22 years of age.
Is that one little angle that we're going to see change over the years where he's not going to find a way to be a bit more effective in the game. So I don't know. I just think it's worth a mention that we can all watch him, appreciate him, but think about next season. He's going to get better, and Pep's going to make him better, I think, in various things to improve different parts of the game.
Then we make the suggestion, the comparison, Rob. If we think of where Jack Grealish was when he came in, where he's improved. Right,
there you go.
Erling Haaland's way ahead of where Jack was, but if there's now another year still, and 2 years of improvement, that's next level. Then we're starting to talk, you know, top of the tree, you know, top draw. But yeah, it's a good point. And Haaland, I'm sure, of course you want to win. Of course, that was the most important thing, the collective for the team. But then, and you know, when you're a top player, you want to make sure you're impacting those big games as well. But so should we? Was it any more individuals, or should we move on to the bigger picture?
First off, Robert, I think we should, you know, talk about that, the images and the amount of tears from players, and players that have been there for a long period of time. They've been disappointed year after year after year after year. The likes of Kyle Walker and the guys have been there for many years. I kind of get it. I was like, there it is. You finally blooming done it. Yeah. When the pressure, the criticism. I just thought there was a really nice reaction from everybody at the end when the whistle blown and people are running on. And so the reaction from these players, De Bruyne and Erling Haaland, and almost like disbelief that they finally done it. I thought that was really, it was just
human nature. When it was like, you know, these are real people as well who feel those defeats, who've been to, who read the media, who've been told. You know, the thing that kind of stood out to me as well, Rob, it was surprised me a little bit in the way it came out, and maybe it shouldn't. It was just like Pep and himself, and almost like the toll that this has taken on him. You know, the first word he came out and said, I'm tired, I'm calm, I'm satisfied. And then he went and threw out an F-bomb. He said, this F-bomb trophy, it's so difficult to win. And it's just that it kind of hit home to me, Rob, how much it means to him and how hard he works and what he puts into it and this season. And said he didn't start the season well before the World Cup. After the World Cup, I've had to get things going. And just really what I think what he's giving and what it's taking out of him, Rob, it kind of hit home how difficult this is. And listen, people can say about all the money and all the teams and all that, it's still inside. You're still nervous if you're Erling Haaland. You've got 36 Premier League goals scoring for fun. You Pep Guardiola and won everything. It still hurts you inside, and you're still kind of putting everything into making sure your team get over the line. Mm.
Well, because there's so many reasons. So the players are emotional, not only because they've reached that trophy that everybody knows that's why Pep was brought in. And Pep himself said it, Rob. He said it himself when asked about how great is this team. He said, listen, we all know that we can't be regarded or thought of as one of the best teams ever in English football without the Champions League. And he's absolutely right. So that when you talk about relief, that's what it's coming from. He's like, done it. Finally, I mean, a treble.
Yeah.
So hard to do. And listen, we ain't going to get into it now about that Man United team's treble and this treble. Crikey. But it's so different, Rob. There's so many different things, the way that teams are constructed from youth players. It's no point. We played against that Man United side. So maybe another time we will get into
how
we feel there a little differently. But this is such a, this is such an important part of Pep, and you know, the ownership at Man City and the chief executive and all the big guns were there to see it there. And you know, I felt like, you know, I'm an English guy in this pub in Italy, and I was rooting for the English team.
Because
not only because they're English, but I've appreciated what Pep Guardiola has done. I mean, what a manager! I've studied him. I've watched him from his first few games at Barcelona, to producing that team to of course where we're at right now. So he is a genius of a coach. He's changed football tactics forever. Yeah. There's so many things now that's done differently in the Premier League that wasn't done before he came. Mm. And you know, whether people, you know, turn their nose up at that, it's just the facts, different positions, different systems, different ways of playing, goalkeepers, fullbacks, midfield players, false nine. I mean, I like that creative coach that plays all out. You know, is thinking about being proactive. What are we going to do to win instead of the other way around? So I'm pleased to see it, Rob. And, you know, and this you know, where this team goes from here and how people think about this team in terms of all-time greats, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading stuff where we've got to appreciate Pep as one of, you know, one of the best of the generation, a game changer in what he's done. You talk about those tactics. You know, it's not just changed Premier League, Rob. It's changed English football. I see League One games where people are playing inverted fullbacks now and false. Now, it's incredible what effect this guy's had on English football. And English football will be better and so much better for it. You know, maybe look back when he's moved on. Again, Rob, you know, I know you're dating in fact, man. So I just wanted to just get a sense of Pep and he was talking about, I went back to when he took over from Pellegrini, 2015-16. That season, City just qualified for Champions League. They drew 1-1 away with Swansea to get Champions League football. I think that was a fourth place finish at the time. So, yeah, they'd won a couple of titles before, but it wasn't a City team that were always going in that direction. They'd had a little bit of a dip after winning titles, and he's come in. And I remember the interview said, the most important thing he felt, Rob, was the team that he took over didn't celebrate their achievements and didn't celebrate success well enough. He said, teams that I play in, we together, we get a winning culture, but we celebrate what we do. And he said that was his biggest thing, and that was 6 years ago. In that time, he's won five titles, FA Cups, League Cups for fun, and the Champions League. But the big thing he said, Rob, is he wants his team to enjoy and celebrate again. It was really interesting that you said, because some of those scenes that we saw were a different look to players, a different look to City that we don't normally see. You know, the kit man diving on the floor and the thing, the players singing and to Rodri and holding up and having beer. There's things that we don't really associate that much with City and the way they are. Almost like they're a bit robotic and they get the job done and there's less emotion.
Because there's always another game, Rob. There's always another game.
Yeah. But I just thought that's what Pep wants to create. Not only the football, but that spirit. And you know, Jack Grealish came out a couple of things and said, like, I wanted to win it for himself, but for this team and for Pep and the staff. It's like he buys you into the whole thing, Rob. It's not just you as an individual and it's another medal and you can say you're a treble winner. I think it's part of who you are in that group. And that group in 10, 15, 20 years' time can come together and remember what they've done. So I just thought it's not just the football; it's what he's doing to a group of people at this special time that makes Pep a special manager as well.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this before, Rob, but I do think, you know, some little tweaks that he's done this season to the team, to the tactics for John Stones into midfield, and it's a different setup this year.
Yeah,
and there's extra defender basically into the side has made a difference. I really do. I think it's more physical. More defensively balanced than we've seen it before. And I think that's what's brought these trophies this year.
Does, as we think, he talked about, don't even, Pep said, I think in one interview I heard, like, don't even talk about next season. Like, I can't even get my head around it yet. They've got a parade to do in Manchester. I'm sure they're going to have plenty of parties and things to enjoy. But next season will come, Rob, and it ain't that far away. I think it's like 10 weeks or something now to next.
Oh, God.
I mean, you have someone playing international football. And I know. I mean, it's incredible, incredible, incredible.
Yeah.
But to the point where, does his job become a bit more difficult when you've won a treble? In any way?
Blimey. Oh, gosh, a question that you never really think about much, do you?
I mean, it'd be interesting. I don't know how United particularly did after their treble.
I don't know. Are you basically sort of hinting that this team has been absolutely geared up to win and they've done it? And where do we go now?
It's a big puff. We're great players and we've won it. Like, how can he re-motivate you again to go again from day one on top of it and on it? Maybe it's competition for places. Maybe it's his magic. It's just part of what is going to be another challenge for him next year. You know, the big challenge was, can they win it? Now they've won it, Rob. What does winning it do to them? Make them more hungry to go again?
I think there'll be a few changes. Few changes. In these Pep seasons, there's been little different Pep teams, actually. You had the Aguero years. Yeah. Yeah, you've had different little changes, and there's different changes for this season.
Yaya Toure. You think, Mike Gundogan be one that he goes, you know, been brilliant, great captain, first person I brought in the door when I came. But now I've got to freshen up with something else, or chemistry's got to change with something else.
I just think they've got to freshen up, and that seems crazy, isn't it? But I think we're going to see more of Phil Foden. Phil Foden. It's funny, Rob, because I was in this bar, right, and all the Inter fans, as De Bruyne down injured, they're all cheering in the bar because they're the best midfield players coming off the field. I'm like, well, no, hang on.
Yeah,
like,
this one. Yeah, by the way.
This guy. Yeah. I think Phil Foden, remember his turn where he should have scored?
He should have hit
one of the corners. Yeah. I mean, I think Phil Foden potentially can be as good as Kevin De Bruyne. And Kevin De Bruyne has been one of the best midfield players that the Premier League and English football has ever seen. So that's it's a big statement. And I'm saying potentially. I'm not saying he's going to be it. But the ability that he's got, the engine that he's got, the creativity that he's got, the goal threat that he's got, the manager that he's got to drive him mentally. You're going to see more of Foden. Maybe you're going to see more of Rico Lewis. Akanji is a new player into the team. So they're going to make some signings. They're already talking about a couple of players they're going to try and bring in. So I think he'll redo it, Rob. I think it might be something different. Maybe another different system. Because I think you've got to keep doing the same again with the same team.
He's got to freshen it.
But he'll find a way to freshen it up, to remotivate. Erling Haaland will want to score more goals. Haaland's going to be scary, I think, next year. I think he's going to be much better. Yeah. And that might go for some other players. Maybe Mahrez might be, you know, they might release a few to bring some others in. So I think it'll be a little bit different. But Pep, we've questioned him before, Rob, and I've questioned him before. I think it's the last two seasons in the Premier League. I haven't tipped them to win it. I felt like the others might get the upper hand on him, but they haven't. Yeah. They haven't. Yeah. And I think he'll find a way. He'll take a break. He'll come back. And he'll be flipping, chomping at the bit. He'll be pulling people's shirts and coaching them on the sideline. Yeah. He'll be fired up. He'll be on the up and down the touchline. I think he's just that guy. He's an amazing lover of the game.
To that point, and you're right, because I think that's what drives him, and I think that's why people work with him, and they go so far. And then there might be a time, like the Gundogan, where you go, we're both, you know, exhausted each other. But when you think of Pep, Rob, and the challenges and what he's doing and how he's doing it, my worry for him is that at some point that's going to take its toll on him. Mm. I don't know if you can do that for 2, 3, 4, 5 more years. I think we saw in Jurgen Klopp, we saw a little change where he took a gap year this year. They weren't quite at the best, and maybe he wasn't quite working the same way and getting the same results. Listen, who knows with Pep? Maybe he can keep going, keep bringing new players, keep changing things up. It can be refreshing. I just felt like I saw him yesterday, and he looked like he could do 12 months out of football, get his life.
Which he's done before, Rob, hasn't he? He's done that before after Barcelona.
How does he keep remotivating himself to motivate the players?
He's done it, hasn't he? He's done it, Rob. But listen, I like the point. I like the point. Yeah. Because, can he keep this craziness up, you know, year after year? And it's valid. It's tough for me to go against him now, given that he's proved me wrong the last couple of years where I didn't think they were going to do it. And he's kept that drive. But it's a good point. He might need a break at some point.
Mm. Might just do. Listen, before we move on and finish on City, we have to readdress Rob. So, was it 115 charges Premier League against City? And listen, any time you talk about City, it's almost like the caveat is you have to talk about what could be coming down the road, or this case and what's going to happen. So, you know, the elephant in the room. We have to be true. We're talking of City as they stand, where we are now, with the case to come in, however many years or months down the road. But I think it's valid that we do mention it, that there is a case to be answered, and at some point City will, you know, go to court and have their day and, you know, try and plead their innocence, and we'll move on, hopefully, and there'll be no asterisks against what they do. But, you know, any non-City fan and anybody who's not seen, I'm sure people maybe listen to our podcast and saying, well, it's okay for City because they've cheated. And, you know, we're not balancing up the argument by saying, you know, what could be at stake.
Mm. Totally. And we mentioned this beforehand that we do want to talk about it a little bit because it's absolutely right. And, you know, as much as we're going to talk about in the future how great this team is, there's a cloud over them. There's a cloud over the team, the club. There just is. There just is. And until they clear their name from the accusations and the charges that's been made of them, the Premier League, and even Pep himself said it in a, just a few weeks ago, wasn't it, a press conference, Rob, that let's just get this done. Let's get everybody in the room. Get the lawyers in the room. Let's just thrash this out. It's going to be better for everybody. Let us, you know, fight our corner. And I'm not sure what the right phrase is, but like they've been charged.
Address the allegations, didn't they?
Address the allegations.
Yeah,
and you know. Whichever way it goes, let's get quickly, because if they're found guilty, and there's significant rule breaking, changes everything. Yeah. Sorry, changes everything. It just does. Who knows where we go to at that point? It doesn't bear thinking about, Rob. If these charges are proven that. But I just want to get to that point quickly.
And we can find out.
It might be in Blim and Years where he might not even be there. But it is important, and we're not going to ignore the issue. We're not going to just eulogize, you know, how great they are and he is and everything else is. We are absolutely 100% understand what the allegations are, how serious they are, breaking the rules, bending the rules, increasing your revenues falsely, you know, consulting managers, earning extra revenue. We've heard it all. We know it all. And it's real. And it's real. And until it's answered and it's figured out and it's put to bed, the UEFA situation, they were found guilty with some of it, and some of it they got off of. Let's see it. And let's see it quickly because it's a big deal. It's a massive
shadow over what they've done, and nights, brilliant nights like last night, you know, Champions League winners and treble winners as well.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, mate, let's move things on quickly to other competitions in Europe. The Europa Conference League, sort of scoffed at many as not a real European tournament. It was Thursday night. It was West Ham going about their business pretty quietly, got into the semi-finals, got themselves to a final play at Fiorentina, and get themselves a late win courtesy of a Jared Bowen goal, brilliant goal. And then the scenes, Rob, well, scenes like you've never seen before. David Moyes running on the pitch, doing his dad dances, West Ham fans in tears. I think we go back to, was it 1980, so since they last picked up some kind of silverware or something. I mean, incredible, incredible scenes. And It made me think, Rob, whatever we say about these competitions, when you win a cup of any nature with a group of players who are not used to winning cups on a regular basis, it matters, mate. It matters.
That's right. I mean, you know, it's a European competition, and some might mock it a little bit and list the teams that they've played through the competition. But you're right. I mean, from as long as... when we ever first started kicking the ball, mate, what was it all about? It was about going to a tournament and getting a little medal. And I had a little trophy cabinet. I got my little medals, my little pendants, and my little plastic medals all along. And that's what it was all about. It was about winning games and cup finals, cup finals. And fair play. I mean, the scenes from... and even his dad was there, wasn't he? Did you see the picture of him?
Yeah, put his medal around his dad. Yeah, he put his medal around his... I mean, incredible.
I've never seen David Moyes like that.
of 1,000 games as a manager. He's never won a trophy, Rob. You know, he's got Champions League. He's done. He's kept teams up. He's got, you know, West Ham in Europe. So he's done things, but he's never, like you say, had that medal or that trophy or something. And I thought the scenes were brilliant. I thought it just stands for what is great about football. Yes, City, you know, win something every year, and whether they win the Champions League or not. But West Ham United, Rob, massive club, big club, well-supported club. This means something. They go in the Europa League next year and play in Europe.
Straight in.
Proper competition.
There isn't many teams that can win the Premier League. I mean, we all know about the Leicester story, which is 5,000 to 1. So all the others, and West Ham are right in that group, you know, with the big clubs that are at that point yet. So this is it. The cup competitions are everything. And that's why some of these clubs have been frustrated that their clubs haven't done better in cup competitions. Fair play to West Ham. Had a bit of a nightmare in the Premier League this year. They've had a very difficult season with the Thursdays and the Sundays, but they've kept their form all the way through this competition. And fair play to be motivated and to get themselves safe in the Premier League and to win this, to push them into the Europa League. And, you know, we saw the scenes, you know, I think David Moyes, Rob, I think we spoke about this, didn't we? And
we've had a couple of chats, didn't we?
You were like, I don't know whether, but you know what I mean, Rob? You said, like, I don't care if I win, but I still think they're going to change him. But winning this, they can't. I think they've already said, haven't they? They've already said
they've come out. I mean, my argument was, and it's more of my West Ham friends who talk about it, that there's times with David Moyes, despite the win, that it's sometimes the football and the style of football and that it's not an enjoyable win, even when...
And it's not enhancing some of the guys that's there as well.
And you've got a talented pool and maybe not getting enough. But now it's like... last Wednesday night.
It
was a special, special night. He'll have a special place in West Ham history. And the Hammers fans will back him again now, Rob. And I think he'll be giving them a little bit more of a boost, a little bit more time. And that might be what David Moyes needs to maybe just loosen things up a little bit. League form was disappointing. But there's many seasons West Ham's had poor league form, even get relegated, and they haven't won a European trophy at the end. So brilliant scenes for West Ham.
It's like Declan Rice, Rob, said after. You see Declan Rice's quotes after. It's like, you know, he saved us once, he saved us twice. We get, we win a European trophy. He's one of the best West Ham managers
we've ever had. Yeah.
Can you give him
a statue and then sack him? Is that kind
of... in all seriousness, Rob, it is the right thing to do them to continue. But as we know, before you know it, the season's going to start. Yeah. And if they have a poor 2, 3, 4 months,
he's going to get to Christmas.
And he could quickly go. But that's football. Mm-hmm. He knows about it. But I think you said that didn't he say once, I'm happy for me that we got to the final?
Yeah, he's happy for me. Yeah,
and I think
he's
for one point, he said, you know what? I've been around the block and I've been criticised and all the Man United stuff and different jobs.
Yeah,
and
great to see.
It's great, isn't it? It's a great story. And there's many people have told me, of course, Tim Howard being the main guy, spoke to both of us, what a great person
he is.
What a great human being David Moyes is, and a great career. And this is really nice for him. And, of course, West Ham United.
Yeah, great story.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. Because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
A little bit more news, mate. This comes from North London. They've eventually got themselves a manager, Ange Postecoglou. Celtic manager. I think he was favourite after Celtic won the treble up in Scotland. Comes with a decent CV. I didn't actually realise he was part of the City Group before, in one of the City Group clubs. Before he moved to Celtic, because he's had some relationship with Pep in the past. Moved to Celtic, did well. Obviously, came up against Steven Gerrard's Rangers team, but has sort of got himself in winning form and enough to get the Spurs job. How do you think Spurs fans are sort of taking this one? It's not quite the normal high profile European won all trophies type of guy, is he?
No, he's not. He's obviously very, very different. I think it's, I understand some of the fans that's a little underwhelmed with this. But what we've seen right now, and of course I've read a ton of stuff on him. I can't find my notes right now. I've got a ton of notes on Postecoglou, but I can't find him right now. I know he's been successful, Rob, everywhere he's been. Yeah. He's won everywhere he's been. I know he went across to Japan. He won there. Mm. He comes across to Scotland with the national team. He did a great job. I think he started at South Melbourne, or the Melbourne Roar was his second club. He's won championships in both of those Australian teams. He's won in Japan. Of course, it's Celtic. A very good friend of mine is a Celtic fan, and he knew this was going to happen. He says his football is incredible. Very, very, very attack-minded. Mm. It's his way. He's very proactive, very confident. You know, he's a very good talker and a communicator. We've already seen that. You see his message, Rob, the last few days about how proud he is to be manager of this great club. Yeah, he's not a flipping a huge name, but I think he's somebody that wants to be at the club. I think he's somebody, if Harry Kane goes, isn't going to flipping go crazy and hammer the club. And I think he's going to appreciate his job. I think he's going to give it everything. I think he's going to be a very likable, lovable coach that they've got. But, and I like the appointment. You're saying that I like the appointment, but there will be a concern that this is an incredible step up.
From
Scottish football. And listen, I know he's done a brilliant job, and they were a bit of a mess. They were miles behind Rangers when he took over, and in no time at all, that they've won doubles and trebles and everything else up there. But this is a big step up. It's a big step up in terms of quality. And I know he's a big play from the back guy and front foot. And my players are wanting to pass forward all the time. And all these ideals that we all love. And they obviously work for other clubs. But we've seen players and managers, Rob, come into this division. And it's such a high level to do that. And the other thing, Rob, is, you know, and this might be the toughest bit, is that sometimes these Premier League players, they're like, who are you? What have you done? Yeah. Are they going to be able to throw it over to you,
Rob? It's a bit Graham Potter-esque, you know, that kind of question mark when he walks in that big dressing room. And big
if things don't go well initially, early, how much wiggle room is he going to have with the fans and with the club? I'm sure the club, they're going to give him plenty, but the fans, Rob, if they start off poorly. And by the way, I think you started off poorly at Celtic. And his previous club,
he got a little bit of criticism.
What do you see? Do you think there's a potential?
Well, I think what I do like about it is it feels more Pochettino coming to Spurs than Jose Mourinho. And you know what? Sometimes I might have to just start by lowering expectation a little bit, and that take me a little moment to work it out. The Harry Kane thing's massive. The relationship with Daniel Levy is key, Rob. If the fans, for a little while, you've picked this guy now. I think you're giving him a 4-year contract. You've got to back this guy. You've got to let him get on with what he needs to do. And it might be a bit of sorting out. It might be a bit of transfers in and out. Get the style of players that he wants, the profile of players that he wants. It might take him a year or two. But as you say, all you hear is about his team scoring goals. I think they've got over 100 goals again in Celtic this time. The forwards are all dangerous, getting in good spots. Play good football from the back. Everything that Spurs want, and Spurs have been in a mess for the last 3-4 years, so maybe it might take him 6 months to start to implant what he wants. But he's got to be given time. I think Spurs have got to be a little bit more realistic with what they're aiming for, and I'm sure it's going to be, you know, they were going to want a Champions League spot, but they finished eighth this season, Rob, I think, in the league. Yeah. So there's a bit of work to do.
It's not that similar, but you talk about Graham Potter, Rob, and it's a similar jump up in clubs, isn't it? It is a similar jump up in football clubs in terms of, you know, jumping up. Mm. And I think we always said with Graham Potter, it's going to be difficult, but we've got to see a little bit of progression. We've got to see some progression. It'll be the same with Postecoglou. You're going to have to see, even with a rough start, but over time, You've got to see what he's trying to do, and you've got to see some improvement, else the pressure will build. But in terms of, it's a great point with the Pochettino thing. He's a builder. Yeah. You know, the football's going to be different. The football's going to be, he's all out attack. He's all out attack.
Which maybe the Spurs fans, you know, they'd rather that, wouldn't they, than what we've seen under Antonio Conte and Jose.
But there's a doubt, there's a risk side of that.
So yeah, there's a balance that he's got to get right. Yeah.
He's
got to get right. But no. Yeah, interesting times. Yeah, interesting times ahead at Tottenham. We'll keep an eye on that. And obviously, once the season starts, we'll see how Spurs get on.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Right, talking about seasons, we're going to go to the most important part of the Two Robbies podcast this time of year. It's the Two Robbies end of season awards. Now, as you can imagine, we get managers, players, agents phoning us up, all trying to get themselves in pole position to win one of our awards, coveted awards that go out to the players. Mr. Musto, I'm going to start you off with your best signing of the 2022-23 season. Who would that be? Who's been best value for money?
Well, I think my signing of the season is going to be a defender that's came into a club and made a big difference with not a huge fee, and has surprised everybody in the league with his quality in all aspects of his game. Manuel Akanji at Manchester City, and there's a ton of others that we can mention and all that. But in terms of kind of surprising, quick, great defender, very good on the ball, not a big fee. Anybody could have bought him really in the Premier League. And Pep brings him, and he can play, he's versatile. He can play centre-back, right-back, left-sided centre-back, left-back. He can play in all those positions. And he has made a difference to this team that we thought was great before. He's made a real difference in terms of how they, their results. There were some games in the Champions League where he did a remarkable job on that right hand side against very quick players. And I think it's got to be Akanji for me, given the impact of that club making them better defensively is so important for their results and the trophies this season.
Good shot. And I'm going to follow you with a defender and actually a centre-back, but I'm going to go for Lisandro Martinez, who I think came into English football, Rob. Many supposedly good reasons the games, pundits, analysts were talking about. First of all, you can't be his size and fit in the Premier League. It's just not going to work. Kind of proved that wrong. Came into a centre-back where I don't think he was guaranteed a starting spot, even though he came in with Harry Maguire and Varane as a centre-back. Came in, Rob, proved to be what Manchester United needed, a bit of aggression, a bit of spirit, a bit of a kind of cult hero to the fans, doesn't mind putting his head in where it hurts, Rob, old-fashioned centre-half. I think was missed towards the end of the season when he picked up a nasty metatarsal injury that he missed out. He was part of the League Cup. He's been a winner throughout his career. And I think these bigger things ahead for Sandro Martinez. So I'm going to go for Martinez as my signing of the season.
Okay, so worst signing is next. The worst signing of the season. we have a list that we kind of pull down a list, and God, there's some names on this list. I'm going to give a couple of mentions, Rob. Mikhailo Mudryk.
Yeah,
I think the expectation, the fee gets a mention. I'm not going to pick him because he's still a young player.
Yeah.
Of all the stuff going on at Chelsea, You know, I'm sure there's better things to come from him. Pierre Aubameyang has been a bit of a disaster, but I'm going to go for a bit of a different one here, Rob. And there's different reasons for it. The worst signing of the season, and this doesn't actually reflect the player, but the football club, is Jorginho Rutter of Leeds United. The club record signing of a position that was badly, badly needed as a striker. They spend a record amount of money on a young striker that never played or very rarely played. No production, no goals, no appearances when he's fit and ready to play, Rob, in the last half a dozen games of the season. There was nothing from your record signing. When you're fighting relegation, you spend all that money on somebody that's not going to help you. So it isn't a reflection on him. I hope he comes again. But to do that as a club, what a horrific signing.
Yeah. Can't argue with that one, actually. But I'm going to go in a slightly different way. He was a player who was available at the start of this season, Rob. There was many people ready to take him in terms of what he might be able to bring. Experience, been at big clubs, know-how, goals, assists, drive, brings a bit of team spirit. Jesse Lingard, my friend, moves to Nottingham Forest. Let me tell you, Jesse Lingard never did a tap towards Nottingham Forest staying in the Premier League. Nottingham Forest stayed in the Premier League almost despite signing Jesse Lingard. I was so disappointed in attitude, production, leadership. You know, been a big player, had great moments. We saw him alone at West Ham, scoring goals, making goals, being part of a team, helping build a spirit. Saw none of that at Nottingham Forest. And Steve Cooper and his team and his other 400 players he had in that dressing room got their heads down, and Awoniyi and Brennan Johnson and Gibbs White all put their, you know, gave everything, Robert, and somehow kept Forest in the league. But Jesse Lingard, my worst signing of the season.
Wow, I can't argue with that. That's a great shout as well, given the hype and the way they went out and went to get him so seriously. Okay, the next one is the most improved player.
Yeah.
And I go to Arsenal and I go to Gabriel Martinelli. 15 Premier League goals. From a player, again, he's a kid, still a kid at his age that he is right now. Yeah. Martin Odegaard on the left-hand side of Arsenal, Rob. There's many at Arsenal. And actually, there's quite a few around. I mean, you always think about the younger players, and Arsenal have got a ton of them. But in terms of, wow, like, start of the season as good, can do a little bit, being at the side a little bit. Emil Smith Rowe might play more on the left-hand side, or others might play. But he has come on to a point where he is one of those incredible scoring wingers, quick, skillful, works hard, tremendous eye for goal, and 15 Premier League goals. That's a great tally. So it's got to be Martinelli for me.
Yeah. Listen, I don't disagree. I thought there was a couple of others in there. Miguel Almiron, I think in 11 goals, Robbie, from where he's come from the guy who was like a bit of a headless chicken. Him and probably Joe Ellington could go in there for... Jack Grealish was an interesting one, Rob. I know because you pay $100 million, you think he should be great. But Jack Grealish, I think, in terms of improvement, you'd have to say, is up there. But I'm also going to go for an Arsenal player. And I'm going to go for a young Arsenal captain, 24 years of age, Martin Odegaard, who himself got 15 goals, 7 assists. I thought, during that period, Rob, when we were all starting to buy in and believe that Arsenal might just be able to get this thing over the line, there was times when he was untouchable. His ability on the ball, his passing, his goals, his leadership in a very different way. I have to admit, he did fall off a bit towards the end of the season. We didn't quite see all of that, but that'll be part of his learning. That'll be part of what Arsenal have to get better with. But if you just said from the start of the season, Martin Odegaard would be captaining a team that would stay top of the table for that long, had that big an influence, 15 goals from midfield, 7 assists, I just thought the young Arsenal captain deserves a little bit of credit. So he gets my most improved player of the season.
Yeah, it's a good shout. It's a good shout. Okay, so this next one, Robert, it's one that we agree on. And I think going forward, we might call this the Gundogan Award.
Yeah.
It's the underappreciated player of the season. We both had this list. We both come the same player, Ilkay Gundogan, for what he's done for Manchester City in big moments, in big games. The goals that he scored, the captain's performances, lifting the trophies. It's just got to be him, underappreciated performer. What I will add is, you know, with this award during our season, we often sort of look at young players too. Ones to watch. And Julio Enciso, I think I mentioned before, I just want to give him a mention right now again, because he's, I think he's stepped up again in the last few weeks. This young player for Brighton, another one that they brought in, I think he's 19 years of age, a super young player. What a goal he scored late on this season, by the way, as well, for Brighton. So Julio Enciso, just somebody to watch. But, I mean, what else can we say about Ilkay Gundogan, Rob, that we haven't said in terms of underappreciated, the outstanding player in this category? Gundogan.
Absolutely. As you say, you know, there's talk that this could be his last game for City, winning the Champions League and the treble. If it is, what a way to go out. But what a big set of boots that somebody's going to have to fill. Ilkay Gundogan, from the day he walked in, his Pep's first signing, continues to deliver and you know, be an important part of City when they, these bigger names, these more, you know, more star quality in other players, but just somebody we can rely on every week. I'll have Gundogan every week. Okay, my friend, let's move it to the manager of the season.
So you start. You start.
Well, I'll start on this one because I think this is probably the most difficult category. We've obviously got a number of names. Eddie Howe, Rob, for me, comes in third place, could easily have won it. From what Eddie Howe's turned Newcastle from, to Champions League football, style of football, improvement of players, uniting a club, bringing a hope back to an area. Eddie Howe could, in many other ways, be manager of the year. For Mikel Arteta, from the start of the season, to take this team to as close as they did, and yes, we know that in the end there was a 5-point gap, I think it was in the end, that they fell short, but to be top of the table, to get us believing, to have some unbelievable magical moments late in games, you know, the Bournemouth and the Villa and the you know, Nelson and Jorginho with the shot and all those. It was it was a special season for Arsenal. Mikel Arteta should come again. He got a second vote. But it has to go to a man who's got the treble, Rob. Pep Guardiola. Three Premier League titles on the spin. The coveted treble. That Champions League, the one that everyone said would define him and the football club, in a season that they've had and with the players that they've got, it has to be Pep Guardiola for my manager of the season.
Yeah, you know, of course, like, you know, with what he's done, I get that. I'm going to go for somebody different. And I'll chuck another couple of names at you, Rob, that deserve a mention as well. Roberto De Zerbi, what he's done at Brighton, taking them on with some football, you know, that we haven't seen much with the absolute total football that he's played, scoring the goals. He gets a mention for me. How about Gary O'Neill?
Bournemouth, love it.
How about that? How about nobody thinking they were going to escape it? Scott Parker says that we are ill-equipped to perform at this level, to be competitive at this level. And with a few changes in the January window, Gary O'Neill, at Bournemouth, and even Marco Silva. Fulham, They've been out of it, so we didn't really talk about them. But the job that he's done and the tweaks that they made to that team going forward has been astonishing. But I'm going to give my manager of the season to Unai Emery at Aston Villa. And the reason being is we have an example here, Rob. We have a brilliant example of the difference that a manager and a great coach can make. This same group of players, where the previous manager, Steven Gerrard, struggled, couldn't find the right balance, couldn't find the right tactics. We're on the looking over the shoulder at relegation, and yet a different guy comes in with the same guys, plays people, different system, quirky system, by the way, kind of an isometrical system where it's a little bit different from the right and the left-hand side. And their progression through the league has been astonishing, to get into the Europa League, to get a European finish based on where they are. That's what I want to see. Of course, the Pep stuff, you know, But in terms of a manager making a blimmin' proper big difference, it's got to be Emery. And wow, after what he, you know, his experiences before in the Premier League with Arsenal, it didn't go particularly well. His job right before our eyes this season has been remarkable, and how he can change a team in all aspects, but particularly tactically, has been impressive. So I've got to say Unai Emery.
Yeah, good shout. Listen, absolutely no argument with Unai. The job is done to Zerbi, Thomas Frank, Marco Silva.
Yeah.
I think all those, Gary O'Neill are great as well. But I always, just to finish on this one, I always think we have to be a little bit careful that we don't go, oh, Pep, oh, he's won a treble. Yeah, oh, he's this. Oh, let's look a bit different. Let's find somebody else. Mm. Oh, look, this guy just won a treble. There's only been two done in English football. And so I hear you, and I'm pleased you've gone a different way, but I still sometimes feel we don't give enough credit to the winners of the titles and the trophies. Because we always
you know how I feel about Pep.
Of course you do.
And I just geared a bit more to the Premier League than the other.
Maybe the other awards.
But you make a valid point. It's remarkable.
Yeah, and it's nice to maybe do one from each end, Pep winning and somebody else from the other side. So we get to the final award. It's Player of the Season. I think we both go the same way. It's pretty easy to understand who we were. In the run, the likes of Harry Kane, Rob, 30 Premier League goals in a team that finished eighth in the league. Yeah. 30 goals of a club that's only scored 70. You know, it was a great season for Harry, you know, but obviously all the noise was our choice. Marcus Rashford, I thought, had something of a bit of a return to what we've come to expect, 17 Premier League goals for him. Bukayo Saka had a brilliant sort of first two-thirds of the season, maybe dropped off a little bit in the end. That's going to be part of his learning and Odegaard's learning. But it leads us to the man who got 36 Premier League goals, I think, in 35 games, Rob. The most Premier League goals scored in any single season, including a 42-game season. 32 in all comps, I think it was, for Haaland. Just absolutely ripped up the record books and showed us a level. And I think the worrying thing that you said very early in the podcast is, there is more to come, Rob. He's 22 years of age. There's more to come from this kid.
Yeah. It's got to be him. You come in and smash a record like that at his age, at this impact. I know it's a great team. And we could argue about, well, if you put such and such in this team, they'd score that many goals. I mean, Aguero was there a long time and didn't get huge numbers every single season. He's a special player.
Yeah.
I think there is, the scary bit is there's a ton of improvement. there just is in his game. And I think he's at a great place for the great manager to show us that. But no, Erling Haaland, has to be the player of the season for this Premier League campaign, my friend.
So those are the awards. They'll be FedExed out to the recipients. I hope they get them. Make sure you're at home during the summer. Listen, mate, we're going to wrap things up. End of a bit of a crazy Premier League season, but we'll wrap things up. We'll have a short break and then we'll get ourselves ready, get back in pre-season training for the start of a new season. So the Blue Moon Rose High, City win the Champions League and treble winners. Congratulations to Pep and his team. We're going to have a little break now. Super long season, super crazy season, but we'll be back in, I think it's just under 10 weeks, which sounds a little bit incredible. So look out for our next podcast. Early August, we'll preview the upcoming seasons and who the best winners and riders, who we think will win and who we think might get relegated. But for now and for the last time this season, I'm Earl Hughes Musty together with two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.